Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. I have a personal prejudice against trim bass in kirtan, if you don't mind. Mridanga would be good. Maybe on the street or something, but personal, matter of personal taste. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Vallabha Giri Bharadhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Bharadhari Rajajana Ranjana Chamuna Tira Vanachari Chamuna Tira Vanachari Shai Om Vishnu Pad Puranam Savadi Rad Charja Stoka Sisima AC Bhakti Vedanta Shami Raj Prabhupad Jai Shai Om Vishnu Pad Puranam Savadi Rad Charja Ashtoka Sisima Bhakti Siddhanta Sarja Dio Shami Raj Prabhupad Jai Anand Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Nama Charja Shila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai Prem Sakaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nittananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shari Gaur Bhakta Vrindaki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gop Gopinath Shama Kunaradha Kunigiri Govardhan Ki Jai Vrindavan Tham Ki Jai Navadip Tham Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Ki Jai Ganga Mai Ki Jai Chamana Mai Ki Jai Kusi Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrindaki Jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. Gaur Premanande. Can we make this higher? It's invisible. Can we make this higher? It's invisible at this site. There's probably Lamrita over there, maybe a couple of things. I'm not a big fan of books as tables.
It's okay?
Yeah. Thank you all very much for coming. We'd like to ask for an auspicious cell phone check. All the cell phones silent, please. Om Ajnanati Mirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurn Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Tadhati Shapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamalam, Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha, Shri Rupam Shagrashatam, Shahagana Raganatan Vitam Stam Sajivam, Shadvaitam Shabhatutam, Parijana Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha Krishna Padam, Shagana Ladita Sri Vishakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kam Shana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamani Hori Priye Vancha Gopitrubhyascha Kripa Sindho Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we're reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila chapter 6. Nomitam Gaurachandram Ya Kutarka Karkashashayam Sarvabhomam Sarvabhuma Bhakti Bhumanam Acharat. Kaviraj Goswami offers his obeisances to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who converted the hard-hearted Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, the reservoir of all bad logic, into a great devotee. We'll quickly review how this happened. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arrived in Jagannath Puri. And upon entering the temple of Lord Jagannath and seeing the form of the Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu fainted. And the guards were going to rough him up, but Sarvabhauma saw that he's quite a special person, so he interceded and brought Lord Chaitanya home. Then the devotees of Lord Chaitanya came following behind him. They were at some distance behind, and they came to know that some sannyasi entered the temple and he fainted and he's been brought to the home of Sarvabhauma. So they understood this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and they went to his home. They'd come in touch with Gopinatha Acharya, whom they knew from Navadvip, who was the brother-in-law of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and who was a great devotee of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the after some time, the Lord, there was some chanting of Hare Krishna, the Lord awakened. And Sarvabhauma requested him, please don't go to the temple except with me or one of my men. Then, to make a long story short, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya arranged for a suitable apartment for the Lord, and there was some discussion between Gopinatha Acharya and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, in which Gopinatha Acharya said that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya gave, right, no, he's not. Maybe he's a great devotee, but you don't know what you're talking about. Lord only appears in three ages, not in four ages. There was some discussion from the scriptures. And Gopinatha Acharya finally said that you're not going to be able to understand this identity of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because it requires the mercy of Krishna, which you don't have. Atapite deva padambuja dvaya prasada leshana grihite vihi janati tattvam bhagavan mahimno chanya ekopi chudan vichinva. You can go on thinking and thinking and thinking and arguing and speculating as long as you like, but you'll not be able to understand Krishna. Krishna can be understood by a person who's got just a little bit of Krishna's mercy and not by others. So this kind of discussion went on. Bhattacharya was a great intellectual, a great authority on scriptures. Even the sannyasis, although he was a householder, even sannyasis used to hear from him. He was so learned. Then, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had some affectionate feeling for, or appreciation for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he thought that this is a very young sannyasi and very beautiful. How will he maintain his sannyas? He's young, he's good looking, so all the ladies will be attracted to him. How will he keep his sannyas? And there was another question also. In what sampradaya has he been initiated? What is his sannyas name? We came to understand that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was initiated by a sannyasi with the title Puri. He said, well, that's not so good. First class names or names like Saraswati. There's different, there's a hierarchy, as there are in so many things. The Saraswati line is considered very up there. And the Puri line is sort of in the middle, and then there are others still lower. So Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said, well, I could perform some ceremonies and bring him up to the Saraswati standard. Gopinatha Acharya was, you really don't understand who you're dealing with. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya also proposed that if he's going to keep his sannyas, then it would be good. He should actually be studying Vedanta. Because without a firm standing in knowledge, how will he maintain his sannyas? So I can teach him Vedanta. It seems he's not studying so much, chanting and dancing, but not studying. I can speak to him something. So then when Gopinatha Acharya met with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Mukunda, he was very unhappy, expressing his unhappiness about this. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, he's very nice. He's like my father, he wants to do good for me. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted. And let's see, that's about where they are, where we are. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya together visited the temple of Lord Jagannath, and they were both in a very pleasant mood. Okay, let's get this down here. What I really need is this about this high, because my vision is not there. When they entered the temple, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya offered Chaitanya Mahaprabhu a seat, and while he himself sat down on the floor, out of respect for a sannyasi. But we'll see how much respect. He then began to instruct Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on Vedanta philosophy, and out of affection and devotion, he spoke to the Lord as follows. Well, this was some good fortune that although he was thinking, oh, great, bless your heart. Let's see how this works. That should help. Thank you. Although he was thinking of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as being one of the ordinary human beings, he still had some affection and devotion for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That was his good fortune. So Bhattacharya said, Vedanta Shravam e Sanyasira Dharma Nirantara Karatumi Vedanta Shravana. Hearing Vedanta philosophy is a sannyasi's main business. Therefore, without hesitation, you should study Vedanta philosophy, hearing it without cessation from a superior person. Prabhu kai, More Tumi Kara Anugraha. She kartavya tumi je more kaha. Lord Chaitanya replied, you're very merciful to me, and therefore I think it's my duty to obey your order. Shatadin paryanta oiche korein shravane balamanda nahi kohe vashi matra shune. So for 7 days continually, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu listened to the Vedanta philosophy expounded by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't say anything and didn't indicate whether it was right or wrong. He simply sat there and listened to Bhattacharya. No feedback. Ashtama divashe tare puche sarvabhauma shatadin karatumi vedanta shravana. On the 8th day, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya said to him, you've been listening to Vedanta philosophy from me continually for 7 days. Bala manda nahi ka raha mauna dhuri puja ki na puja iha bhujite na puri na pari. You've simply been listening, fixed in your silence. Since you do not say whether you think it's right or wrong, I cannot know whether you're actually understanding Vedanta philosophy or not. Sometimes we have that. We sometimes speak somewhere and the audience is just sitting like wax figures. And you don't know, are they... do they get it? Do they not get it? Do they have an argument? What is with these people? You just don't get any sort of feedback, and you don't, not a sign, you don't know. Like, what do? Do I go on talking, or do I, don't they have any questions? What's what? Is it, are they, so it was like that with Sarvabhauma. 7 days he's speaking, and not a sign, don't sit this way without your back to Prabhupada. 7 days speaking, and no response. So, essentially he's asking, what gives? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Prabhu kahe, murka ami, nahi ajayam, tomar agyate matra, koriye shabhan. I'm a fool, and consequently, I do not study the Vedanta Sutra. I'm just trying to hear it from you, because you've ordered me. Sanyasira dharma lagi shravan matra kori tumi jay artha kara bhujite na pari. No. Only for the sake of executing the duties of the renounced order of life do I listen. Unfortunately, I cannot in the least understand the meaning of what you are presenting. So, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in one sense, is presenting himself as a very humble person. With Prakashananda Saraswati also. Prakashananda Saraswati was a great sannyasi. And when he met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Benares, he asked, sir, you appear to be a very nice sannyasi, but I see you're just, all you do is sing and dance in the company of sentimental people. Why? When you've accepted renounced life, you should be studying Vedanta along with other sannyasis and seriously endeavoring to get free from materialistic material existence. And instead, you're singing and dancing with other sentimental people. May I ask why? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu replied to him also that I'm a fool. My spiritual master certified me as a fool and said, you're not fit to study Vedanta. You should just chant Hare Krishna. So, in this way, first of all, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu indicated that in this Kali Yuga, we may think that we're very intelligent, but actually everyone is a fool. And the biggest fools are the ones who spend their time speculating about the absolute truth and thinking that they know so much, but who don't understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Maya pratigyana, their knowledge has been stolen by illusion. So rather than speculate and be very proud of being a scholar of Vedanta, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu indicated that it's better to be a humble servant of Krishna and develop love of Krishna by chanting the holy name of the Lord. In that discussion with Sarvabhauma, with Prakashananda, and here in the discussion with Sarvabhauma, you'll find that a devotee is also not lacking in philosophical understanding. A devotee is far from being a mere sentimentalist. And so now we're going to find how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu continues. He said, I'm just listening because I'm supposed to, but I can't really understand what you're saying. Bhattacharya kohe na bhuji hena jnana yar bhujibar lagi seha puche punarbar. I accept that you don't understand, yet even one who doesn't understand inquires about the subject matter. Tumi shuni shuni raha mona matra dhari hridaye you're hearing and hearing again and again, yet you keep silent. I can't actually understand what is within your mind.
Prabhugai, sutrarta bhujiye nirmal, tomar vyakya shuniman hoy ta vikal. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu then revealed his mind. I can understand the meaning of each sutra very clearly, but your explanations have simply agitated my mind. Sutrer artha bhasha kohe prakashiya. Sutrer artha bhasha kohe prakashiya. Tumi bhasha kohe kaha sutrer artha achcharya. The meaning of the aphorisms in the Vedanta Sutra contain clear purports in themselves, but other purports you presented simply cover the meaning of the sutras like a cloud. Sutrer mukya artha na karaha vyakhyana kalpanarte tumitaha kara achchada. You do not explain the direct meaning of the Brahma Sutras. Indeed, it appears that your business is to cover the real meaning. Mukhyartha means the direct meaning. The Shastra should be accepted directly, as it is. When we interpret, then we lose the authority of the Vedic knowledge. The Vedic knowledge is powerful, because it's self-evidently true. There are different kinds of evidence, evidence from history, evidence from logic, evidence from direct perception. But the first class evidence is evidence from Shastra. But if we present Shastra and then say, and it means this, and it means that, and I think it means this, and we could look at it that way, then it's no longer Shastric evidence. It's the Shastric evidence is just a starting point for my mental speculations. And that's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was seeing. That the sutras are very clear, but Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, by his impersonal explanations, is taking the sun of Vedanta Sutra and covering it with cloudy explanations. So I can understand the meaning of the sutras, but you're covering the meaning with your explanations. I can't understand those explanations. Upanishad shabde je mukya artha hoy, she artha mukya vyas sutra, sutre shab koi. The Vedanta Sutra is the summary of all the Upanishads. Therefore, whatever direct meaning is there in the Upanishads is also recorded in the Vedanta Sutra, or Vyas Sutra. Mukyarta charya karo gaunarta kalpana abhidha vritti chari kara shabdir lakhan. For each sutra, the direct meaning must be accepted without interpretation. But you simply abandon the direct meaning and proceed with your imaginative interpretations. Mukhya vritti means the direct meaning, and gona vritti means indirect, or how does Srila Prabhupada say? Kalpana. You have indirect meaning, gonartha. Kalpana means concocted, imagined. You've imagined some impersonal explanation, and therefore you're not giving the actual meaning. Jiver ashti vishta dvi shanka gomoy shruti bakye she dvi mahapavitra hoy. Conch shells and cow dung are nothing but the bones and the stool of some living entities, but according to the Vedic version, they are both considered very pure. Prabhupada explains, according to Vedic principles, bones and dung are generally considered very impure. If one touches a bone or stool, he must take a bath immediately. That is the Vedic injunction. Yet the Vedas also enjoin that a conch shell, although the bone of an animal, and cow dung, although the stool of an animal, are very much sanctified. even though such statements appear contradictory on the basis of the Vedic version, we still accept the fact that conch shells and cow dung are pure and sanctified. Even today, in the Indian villages, you'll find they don't go to the corner store and buy Dettol or some sort of antiseptic. They take cow dung and they mix it with water, and then they use it for cleaning house or cleaning any place. And someone may say that you're not making it clean, you're making it dirty, you're taking stool. You imagine someone taking dog stool and turning it into a disinfectant, and advertising it, you know, Phytosol or something. But the Vedic injunction is that although the dung of an animal is very contaminating, the cow dung is purifying. It's actually antiseptic. Similarly, bones. You know, if somebody is handling bones of an animal, then that's dirty. You've got to, even any doctor will say, if you're handling bones, then you've got to wash your hands afterwards. Or Vedic literature says, take a bath. Bones are contaminated thing. And yet, the conch shell is the bone of an animal. And we take that conch shell, put it to our lips, like kissing the conch shell. So, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, this is not a mistake. The conch shell and the cow dung are considered pure, according to Vedic authority. So we don't make an argument about it. We don't say, well, all right, the Vedas say this, but we have to do some laboratory tests, or we have to empower a panel of scientists to tell us whether this is right. It's said in the Vedas, we accept it. And Prabhupada mentioned that later some scientist in Calcutta did a laboratory analysis of cow dung and found that it was antiseptic. But the Indian villagers didn't wait for this scientist in Calcutta to figure it out. They just accepted it on Vedic authority and let the scientists come later. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, now he gives the point. Shvata praman veda satta jay koi lakkana korile swata pramanya hani hoy. The Vedic statements are self-evident. Whatever is stated there must be accepted. If we interpret according to our own imagination, the authority of the Vedas is immediately lost. We covered that point. Vyasa sutra artha yoiche suryer kilon sokalpita bhasya meke kore ashjata. The Brahma Sutra, compiled by Srila Vyasadeva, is as radiant as the sun. One who tries to interpret its meaning simply covers that sunshine with a cloud. Veda Purane, Ved Purane kahe Brahma Nirupam, She Brahma Brihad Vashtu, Ishar Lakshman. All the Vedas, and literature that strictly follows the Vedic principles explain that the Supreme Brahma is the absolute truth, the greatest of all, and a feature of the Supreme Lord. Brahma means the greatest. Tato Brahma Jigyasa, the Vedanta Sutra begins, now is the time to inquire about the greatest. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is the explanation of the Vedanta Sutra by the same author. And there he explains that the greatest is the personality of God. Yes. Sarvaisharya paripurna swayam bhagavan tare nirakar kori karaha vyakyan. Actually, the Supreme Absolute Truth is a person. the Supreme Personality of Godhead, full with all opulences. You are trying to explain him as impersonal and formless. This is the great disease of the mental speculators, that they arrive at some conclusion in which the absolute truth is ultimately formless, no form, no qualities, no activities, no nothing. That's their mistake. Nirvishesha tare kohe je shutragon prakrita nisheti kore aprakritas tapam. Wherever there's an impersonal description in the Vedas mean to establish that everything belonging to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is transcendental and free of mundane characteristics. Apani Pado Prabhupada quotes in the purport, Javano Grihita Pashatya Chakshu Sashrinocha Karna Saveti Vedyam Nachatasyasti Veta Tamahuragriyam Purusham Mahantam. Although the Supreme Lord is described as having no hands and legs, he accepts all sacrificial offerings. He has no eyes, yet he sees everything. No ears, yet he hears everything. When it is stated that the Supreme Lord has no hands and legs, one should not think that he's impersonal. Rather, he has no mundane hands or legs like ours. He has no eyes, yet he sees. This means that he does not have mundane, limited eyes like ours, like mine, barely making up the book, 2 feet. No mundane hands or legs like ours. No eyes like ours. Rather, he has such eyes that he can see past, present, and future everywhere, in every corner of the universe, and in every corner of the heart of every living entity. Thus, the impersonal descriptions in the Vedas intend to deny mundane characteristics in the Supreme Lord. They do not intend to establish the Supreme Lord as impersonal. This is the mistake of the impersonalists. They think that if there's form, it must be like our form. If there are qualities, they must be mundane like ours. This is called cow in the barn philosophy. You know cow in the barn philosophy? Anyone familiar with cow in the barn philosophy? No. Not farmers, huh? Cow in the barn philosophy is, once there was a fire in the barn, and now whenever the cow sees red, she thinks it's fire. That's cow in the barn philosophy. So the Maya bodies are like that. They have their experience of mundane form. So whenever they hear about form, they think it must be mundane. They have their experience of mundane relationships. Whenever they hear relationship, it must be mundane. Qualities, mundane, everything mundane, because that's their experience. So if there's any form, qualities, pastimes, anything, oh, it must be mundane, because that's their experience. So they can't understand Krishna by that method. Yaya shutir jolpati nirvishesham sa shabhutate savishesham eva vichara yoge satihantata sam prayo baliya savishesham eva. This is a quotation from Chaitanya Chandrodaya Nataka, drama by Kavi Karnapur. Whatever Vedic mantras describe the absolute truth impersonally only prove in the end that he's a person. The Supreme Lord is understood in two features, impersonal and personal. If one considers the Supreme Personality of Godhead in both features, one can actually understand the absolute truth.
He knows that the personal understanding is stronger, because we see that everything is full of variety. No one can see anything that is not full of variety. Brahma hoite janme vishwa, brahmete jivai, she brahme punarapi, hoi yai loi. Everything in the cosmic manifestation emanates from the absolute truth, remains in the absolute truth, and after annihilation, again enters into the absolute truth. Srila Prabhupada explains in the beginning of his Srimad Bhagavatam that there's some difference between the idea of God and the idea of the absolute truth. When we think of God, we think of the supreme controller. When we think of the absolute truth is the origin of everything, janmadhyasya. The origin of everything, the source of everything, the place to which everything goes at the end, and the truth upon which everything rests now. Of course, God is the absolute truth. They're the same entity. But the philosophical understanding of the absolute truth is a more refined conception. Apadam karunam, apadam karanam, harikaram karaktim, bhagavanir savishesh etim chim. Personal features of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are categorized in three cases, namely ablative, instrumental, and locative. Any grammarians out there? Anyone understand this? Yeah? No? Okay. This is grammar. In grammar, well, in English grammar, we don't really have case endings on our words. We use prepositions. Think little words like to, from, in, by. So something is from my father, or it's to my father, or it's by my father, or it's in my father. And in some languages, like Sanskrit, Latin, Russian, I think, and others, the function that's performed by these little prepositions is performed by endings on the words, which are called case endings. So when you see the word, you know that it's in this case or that case or the other case. There are no prepositions to say in this, on this, from this, to this, by this. But rather the word itself ends in such a way that you know what part of speech it is, what function it's performing. Is it the subject of the sentence? Is it the object of the sentence? And so on. So, for example, we have Krishnaya, which means to Krishna, Krishnat, which means from Krishna, Krishnasya, of Krishna. Well, these are case endings, and these endings have different grammatical designations, aims by which they're called. Ablative means from. The case that's used when something is from. Krishnat, the ablative case, from Krishna. And instrumental, by Krishnena, by Krishna. Demon was killed by Krishna. That's instrumental case. Krishna was the instrument for killing the demon. He was instrumental in bringing about the death of the demon. So Krishnena, by Krishna. And locative, in Krishna. In Krishna. So the absolute truth is understood that way. What is it? truth then? Statement to your Shastras. There's some particular quotation that I'm missing. It's just about in my mind. Yato vayimani bhutani jayate. That from which everything comes, by which everything is maintained, in whom everything exists. Everything comes from Krishna, everything exists in Krishna, everything is not by Krishna. So he's existing in three cases. That's the meaning. Okay. Bhagavan bahu vaite jave koilo man prakrita shaktite tave koilo vilokan she kale nahi janme prakrita mano nayan ateva prakrita brahmir netra man. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead wished to become many, he glanced over the material energy. Before the creation, there were no mundane eyes or mind. Therefore, the transcendental nature of the Absolute Truth's mind and eyes is confirmed. In Prabhupada quotes in the purport that in Upanishads, Chandogya Upanishad, Tvadaikshita Bahu Syam Prajaya, Prajayaya, that the Lord desired to expand himself into many, and so he glanced over the material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita also it said that the Lord, Prakriti Suyate Satcharacha. Mayad Yakshena, by my supervision. The Lord literally has supervision. He glances over the material nature and everything's activated. That's how Maya is working. The Mahavishnu glances over the material energy and the material energy is activated. So what argument is Kaviraj Goswami making here? What is his argument? Yeah, go.
The Lord glanced means that he had eyes.
Yes. And what kind of eyes?
Non-material eyes, because they existed before creation.
Exactly. Someone says that the Lord's form is a product of Maya. The Mayavadis say that. But in the Shastra it said, the Lord glanced over material nature and activated material nature. That means his glance preceded the active existence of Maya. So how could his eyes, which are the source of that glance, be a product of Maya? When that glance is what gets Maya going. Very sharp argument. And very difficult to answer. The Mayavadis would have a very hard time answering. The Lord's form is supposed to be material, according to them, and yet the Lord's eyes are what got material energy going to begin with. So it doesn't work. Their philosophy fails. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is neatly making this point to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. For 7 days, you've been going on and on and on with your impersonal interpretations of Vedanta Sutra. I can't figure it out. It doesn't make sense to me. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saying. One time I was editing a purport of, I think it was Chaitanya Charitamrita actually. Yeah, there's a purport in Adi Lila where Srila Prabhupada explains the Mayavadi philosophy And it's quite a complicated explanation. And when you're editing, you want to make sure that you got things right. So sometimes, not very often, but every now and then, if something was very confusing, I would ask Srila Prabhupada, you know, is this right? So I edited the purport, and I said, I've edited it, but I don't know if I've edited it properly, because it doesn't seem to make sense. And Prabhupada wrote back and said, yes, it doesn't make sense, so you've edited it right. The mind-body philosophy ultimately doesn't make sense. It's a lot of words and a lot of word jugglery. They're very sophisticated. The Shankaracharya was very adept at explaining things in terms of Sanskrit grammar and prefixes and suffixes, but it's, Prabhupada says, word jugglery. When you finally look at the philosophy and try to make sense of it, it doesn't make sense. And here's the first class example, that you're saying that the Lord's form is mundane, but the eyes, which are part of that form, are what God made mundane existence going. Well, your philosophy fails. Full stop. Doesn't make sense. Brahma Shabde Kohe Purna Swayam Bhagavan Swayam Bhagavan Krishna Shastra Pramana. The word Brahma indicates the complete supreme personality of Godhead, who is Sri Krishna. That is the verdict of all Vedic literature. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says elsewhere that wherever you see this word Brahma, read Krishna. Wherever we hear about the Supreme, Brahma is referring to the Supreme. We should understand Krishna. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, where the Lord says, Vedaischa Sarvaira Ameva Vedya. The ultimate object in all Vedic literature is Krishna. Everyone is searching for him. This is also confirmed elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanamam mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma suguru. When one has actually become wise through the study of Vedic literature, one surrenders unto Vasudeva, Bhagavan Sri Krishna. Should we take some questions? How late shall we go tonight? 15 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. Have we got any questions so far? Yes. Hare Krishna.
It's not completely part of the talk, what you've been explaining, but I had a question about Pascal.
About Pascal?
The philosopher.
Mm.
And I have a son who's taking philosophy.
Excuse me?
I have a son who's at the university taking philosophy.
Uh-huh.
And he has to discuss this point of Pascal's bet or bid.
Yeah.
Saying that it's better to believe in God because you might get something good from him.
Yeah. It's a bet that if it's a rather famous philosophical bet by Pascal, that you can bet that there is God or you can bet that there isn't. If you bet that there isn't and you're right, well, what do you get for it? But if you're wrong, you're going to get slammed. And if you bet that there is God and you're right, well, then you win the jackpot. And even if you're wrong, no harm. That's essentially Pascal's wager. bit of an actuary there. Something else. Yes.
Maharaj, Mayavada philosophy is so prevalent these days that in ordinary preaching we come across it so often. Can you give a few simple techniques for dealing with Mayavada philosophy and how to make people think something else?
Can't make them think anything else.
At least encourage them to think something else.
Well, Prabhupada gave a hint that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took a very humble method. That he simply sat there and heard for 7 days. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya,
I think this young sannyasi could use a little help. Without Vedanta, this is
quite proud. Proud of his knowledge. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, rather than meet him with a similar attitude, because that's what philosophers do. One is proud and the other is equally proud, and they proudly fight with one another. My honorable opponent has raised this theory, or my honorable colleague has raised this theory, and it's really quite an ingenious theory, and I have to admire the complexity of it and the subtlety of it. But unfortunately, his philosophy is doomed to failure. As I've shown in my paper published in the journal of such and such, blah, 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 blah. And then the other one writes a reply and says, no, we don't need the no photography, please, no photography. It's distracting. The other one writes back and has an equally biting reply, and they go on in this way, throwing erudite brickbats at one another. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took a different tack. He said, yes, I would benefit by hearing from such a learned person who simply wants to benefit me. And he just sat there for 7 days. To the point where finally Sarvabhauma said, all right, why no questions? And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu let him have it. Don't embarrass. So one time Srila Prabhupada was writing to one devotee who was teaching Krishna consciousness to students. And he said that the students are a little puffed up. He said, but they deserve it. In other words, they've taken so many courses and gone through so much austerity. So, all right, let them be puffed up. He said, but we should be very patient to hear from them. To see what is their point of view and so on. Just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, hearing very patiently from Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, so that we can answer them. It's a secret of effective discussion to hear. Before we smash our opponents, what are they actually saying? If you take what you think their idea is and smash it, but that's not what he thinks his idea is, you know, the guy is still standing. You beat him over here, but he's standing over there. So the first thing, sometimes even somebody says, yes, I'm a follower of Buddhism, or I'm a follower of Pascal's philosophy, or I'm a follower of Osho, or I'm a follower of Nosho, or I'm a follower of this or that. And then we've got our index cards on no-show or on Buddhism, and we say, well, rather than that, existentialism, whatever it might be. But half the time, the person himself doesn't know what that person is saying. He's a follower of Buddha, he's a follower of Shankara, he's a follower of Osho. But what those people are saying, what he's saying, are two different things. He really has his own idea. And so if you simply smash whoever or whoever, you may not have hit him. So it's useful to think, well, what does he think? Well, actually, I'm a follower of Shankara. Well, what's your understanding of what Shankara is saying? Then you know that Shankara is saying something else entirely, but you can say, well, here's the trouble with whatever the idea is that the person is expressing. So it's useful to hear from them first. Very, first of all, it's good manners. And they think, yes, here's a person who's really listening to me. Plus, you really get to find out what their ideas are so that you can punch them between the eyes. Rabindranath Prabhu wrote his doctoral dissertation on a philosopher named Charles Hartshorne, who's a process theologian, if you know what process theology is. Quite a sophisticated theologian. He's not a slouch. And Rabindranath Prabhu got some sort of got a line on him, got an angle on him from Srimad Bhagavatam to picking up Krishna conscious ideas, and then seeing where there were defects, shortcomings in Dr. Hartshorne's point of view. And so he wrote his doctoral dissertation accordingly. And of course sent a copy to Dr. Hartshorne. And Hartshorne wrote back. He said, I've only read partway through your thesis. He said, but I have to congratulate you. He said, I think you're the first person who's actually taken the trouble to understand what I've said. You're the first person who's actually taken the trouble to understand what I'm saying. He said, and you've brought to light certain problems in my doctrine, my take on things. I think I'm going to have to do some rethinking of that. So, taking the trouble to understand what a person is saying. So we hear very patiently from students, yes, you're thinking this, you're thinking that. Well, yeah, that has something to it, but we don't have you looked at it this way. Now, in their personal ideas, there must be so many contradictions. Because the impersonal philosophy doesn't ultimately work. If everything is one, where do we get variety? One time we were at a university in Boston. Prabhupada gave a lecture, and then after the lecture there was a sort of reception, you know, prasadam and a little social mixing and all outside. And there were many people there, students, professors, and I was busy talking to someone. And all of a sudden, this ripple went through the room. You know how a ripple goes through the room? Everybody, what was that? What was that? So this big wave went through the room. And then it sort of passed. And I went on speaking. But then I was asking the voice, what happened? What happened was that some Indian gentleman, Indian professor, was arguing with Prabhupada that everything is one, everything is one, everything is one. And Prabhupada's giving him arguments, giving him answers. And the man is going on how everything is one. Finally, Srila Prabhupada grabbed him by the shirt and said, if everything is one, why don't you wear a cotton ball instead of a shirt? Yeah, it's just practical. If everything is one, why don't you wear a cotton ball instead of a shirt? It means everything. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the same argument to his mother. His mother had had forbidden him. There was some, what was it? Oh, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was eating some clay, like Krishna. So Sachimata said, what are you eating clay for? I make nice sweetmeats for you. Chaitanya said, there's no difference between clay and sweetmeats. He's a little child, but he's As a child, he's speaking my body philosophy. There's no difference between clay and sweet means one shouldn't make clay. So, Sachibata was very intelligent. Probably since she was the wife of a pundit. So she instructed the child philosopher that, yes, there's no difference, but there's difference also. So just like clay, when it's in the form of a pot, I can carry water in it. When it's in the form of a brick, can't do it. No. When you want to carry water, why don't you carry it in a brick? Since everything is one. Our Giriraj Maharaj very famously met one such philosopher in Boston, Sankirtan, when we were chanting on the Boston Commons. And the man was arguing that everything is one, and everything is one. Then Giriraj Maharaj argued that if everything is one, there's no difference between you and me. To which the man agreed. And then Giriraj Maharaj said that there's no difference between whether the wallet is in your pocket or in my pocket. And the man was so proud that he wouldn't abandon his philosophy. He had to carry it through the end. So that Giriraj Maharaj got his wallet. I think Gurudas Prabhu did the same thing. He was staying overnight in an ashram or something with some Mayavadi philosopher, some Mayavadi sadhu. And the Mayavadi sadhu was arguing that everything is one, everything is one. So then Gurudas said, if everything is one, then there's no difference whether you have your blanket or I have your blanket. The sadhu spent a very cold night. So everything is one, and yet there's difference between everything and everything else. Our practical experience is not that everything is one, but that everything is different. Someone may say that this is all illusion, that everything is really one, but by illusion we're seeing difference. But then you have to ask where the illusion comes from. If everything is one, there's only the absolute truth and nothing else but, where does my own come from? That they can't answer. Where does the illusion come from? We're all under illusion. That's why we're not seeing everything as one. One time we're under illusion, but where does the illusion come from? Can answer it. There is no answer to this.
Sankaracharya
doesn't discuss it. Sankaracharya doesn't discuss illusion. He won't discuss it.
He can't.
There's no way out of this. It's a trap. It's such a blatant contradiction that there's just no way that we can have this. Everything is ultimately one. Because then you have no way to explain where variety comes from. We don't run into that problem. Ekadesha stitasyagnir chamsna vistarani yata parasya brahmana shakti tateyam akilam. As a virus sitting in one part, in one place, giving forth heat and light and so many different energies. So the absolute truth is in one place and expanding himself by different energies. Material energy, marginal energy, spiritual energy. The varieties are there in Krishna. And he's Parasya Shakti Vividhaya Shriyate. Vividha means variegated. The Lord has variegated potencies. That's the actual understanding of the Absolute Truth. Without variegated potencies, there's no meaning to the Absolute Truth. They try to strip the Absolute Truth of potency, or else they try to make potency itself absolute. Without a potent source. Because they don't want a source and an emanation. They want just everything one. It does not work. Okay. Something else? Yes. Yes.
What can you say to the people who say that God is a sadist? Because
they say that God is what?
A sadist, because he created everything and there's so many problems.
God created everything and there are so many problems and therefore he's a sadist. Yeah, this is like the argument. That's a criminal argument. The criminal's argument that the government is bad, otherwise there wouldn't be jails. What kind of government is this anyway? It puts its citizens in jail. It's a heartless and cruel government.
Did Yudhisthira have jails?
Excuse me?
Yudhisthira? Did he have jails?
No. Jails? What do you mean? I don't understand.
Well, if there's a good king, then why are there jails?
No. Yudhisthira, he didn't need jails. He killed the evildoers on the spot. It's not that when there's an ideal king, then everybody's a good guy. When there's an ideal king, the bad guys have to fear for their lives. Yeah, no, it's not that Kurukshetra wasn't a joyride. Yudhisthira himself killed so many miscreants. So this is your argument, that I'm a good guy, and God is a bad guy because he's giving me a hard time. This is really a criminal mentality. There was a survey done. I can't cite you the source, but I saw the report in which the criminals were interviewed, and practically to a man, they were all, persecuted and unfairly treated. They were really good guys. The chief of them was a gentleman named Al Capone, who at least in America is famous as the archetypical gangster. He was the mafia boss in Chicago. He was in charge of the liquor racket, the casinos, all the prostitution rings, all of this kind of stuff. And knocking off his competitors by giving them, cement feed and submerging them in the river so their bodies don't even turn up. Gangland killings and all of this kind of stuff. Anyway, the government finally caught up with him and put him in jail. And he was later complaining, all I ever did was try to give the people of Chicago a good time. And this is how they treat me. So this is your friend. God is a sadist because the world is constituted in such a way that when you act criminally, you suffer. Now God is a bad guy. God says, surrender to me and I'll protect you from all these reactions. No, I'm not going to surrender. Rather, God should make the world in such a way that I can exploit like crazy and enjoy. The world is constituted in such a way that the more we try to exploit, the more we suffer. And then when we suffer, it's God's fault. God doesn't say, exploit this material. You should recognize that everything belongs to Krishna. But we try to steal it for ourselves, exploit it for ourselves, present ourselves as the enjoyers and controllers. And then when we fall on our face and get bruised, then it's God's fault. It's not that God is a sadist, it's that you're a fool. How's that?
I don't think they'd be very happy with that.
No, they're not going to be very happy. But our job is not to make fools happy. Our job is to tell the truth. They can like it or not like it. Now we may tell them politely, sir, you're a fool. Or Prabodhananda Saraswati, he says that I'm taking the straw between my teeth and falling at your feet and speaking of you highly in so many ways. Hey, sadhu, you're a great sadhu, a great saintly person. Now please give up all your nonsense and surrender to Chaitanya. Okay, some other question? Should we stop here? Okay. And tomorrow evening we'll continue with this encounter between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Okay, thank you all very much. Hare Krishna. Do you have a little more kirtan? What's up, Bhagavan? A little more cute.